On the line with me right now is Scott Cunningham, who's the co-founder and director of Oh Miami. And you have a very ambitious goal here, Scott. You want for everyone in Miami-Dade to encounter a poem during the month of April. How are you doing so far?
I think we're doing pretty well. We've done just about 14 events over the first 13 days of April, and we have three tonight. So just based on that, I think we've generated a lot of buzz. I mean, everyone who's come to the events has loved them, and I think has gone out and spread the word. We've tried to be as ubiquitous as possible in the media so that people will, come across at least the idea of the festival.
Mm-hmm.
We've also done, we've had some airplane banners fly over Miami Beach with a poem on them. So, and I've had a bunch of people call me and said, hey, I saw this piece of poetry from Rilke flying over Miami Beach. Was that you guys?
Nice.
And indeed it was. And just rolling out this week, we've got a poem on every single Miami-Dade bus. So that's 750 buses, and the poems are in three languages. So hopefully that'll reach a lot of people right there. So I think we got a good start.
Yeah, let's get to the specifics here. Oh, Miami, this is a poetry festival. This is the first year.
It is.
How did the idea for this come to you? I mean, what was your goal, and what was the reason for starting a festival like this?
We started a visiting poetry series in 2009 with help from the Knight Foundation. And it was under the rubric of my 501c3, which is called University of Wynwood. And basically, University of Wynwood is an entirely fake university dedicated to the advocacy of contemporary literature. So when that program was a success, Knight kind of came back to me and challenged me to pitch something on a larger scale. So I got together with my co-founder, Pete Borbach, and the first thing we did was we designed a very traditional model for a festival. It would have been over 2 days, and it would have been just readings and panels in one particular place. And we kind of put together what would be for us our dream lineup, and we printed it out, and we sat down and looked at it. And we realized while it was great, and it would have been a great thing to do, we kind of felt like we already knew all 75 people who would go to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't really satisfied with that, and we didn't think that was what really Knight wanted either. I mean, if you're familiar with the kind of projects that Knight gets excited about and the kind of projects that they fund and put their energy behind, all of them are really pushing audiences culturally. They're programs that aren't satisfied with traditional models, that are reaching out to audiences as opposed to waiting for audiences to find them.
Mm-hmm.
And so Pete and I talked, and we said we can do better than this. Like, what? How can we get Miami to interact with poetry in ways that it never has before? And specifically, how can we get people who are already a cultural audience of some type, you know, people who do go to stuff, but if they saw a poetry reading listed in the Miami Herald, probably would never go to it. And so this is what we came up with. We said, well, let's get this mission. What if we just tried to get every single person in Miami to see a poem? I mean, how would that change how we viewed our programming? What would that look like? And so kind of having that lens on as we were working out the programming really changed our thinking, and we started to really think outside of the box and go past what our own particular aesthetic tastes are.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is important, you know, because both of us, I mean, we're both sort of insiders in that, like, you know, we follow contemporary poetry, we read a lot of it, and so we're sort of stuck in this world, you know, for better or for worse. And most people aren't, you know, they don't have the reference points for it that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we were just programming for ourselves, I think a lot of people wouldn't really be interested. But putting on this other pair of glasses and trying to look at the world through the eyes of someone who doesn't know any contemporary poetry, and probably the last time they read a poem was in high school, and it was Robert Frost or it was John Keats or something, and
mm-hmm.
they haven't kept up at all on anything that's happened in the genre in the last 80 or 100 years, which I think is probably true for most people. you know, I don't think we could plan a festival for them just basically doing things that we'd like to go to. So that was how it came about.
I think that there's a lot of people out there that might have a preconceived notion about about what a poetry reading might be. But obviously it's very different. It's changed over the years. Talk about some of the things, you know, how it's different for the poetry that's out there and available now.
Well, I think it is different. I mean, I think, you know, and I think you're right. I mean, I think when people think about a poetry reading, they think about snapping fingers and berets and coffee houses and all that stuff.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Of course not. Of course not. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Or they think about slam poetry, which you know, it definitely had its moment within the last 10, 15 years, and I think was important for bringing poetry to new audiences. But yeah, no, I mean, most of the poetry readings I go to really fit under neither of those categories. I guess I also want to reiterate that I do think a sort of quote-unquote traditional poetry reading where you have a quiet room with one reader and one microphone and sort of an audience that's rapt and ready to hear it is potentially the greatest thing on earth. You know, we didn't design this festival to supplant the poetry reading because it is basically a format. It's a format that works, I think, and it's a format that basically anything can happen in, just like going to a movie. You know, I mean, the format of a movie hasn't changed basically since they started making them. It's a dark room with hopefully comfortable seats and a big screen. But within that format, anything is possible, basically. But the thing is that, you know, I mean, you don't have to convince anyone to go to the movies for the most part. Whereas with a poetry reading, I think you do. And I think you do need, some people do need a gateway drug, to so to speak. So I think that's what, I think what we're trying to do is let people back into poetry and let people back into contemporary poetry, which I do think is pretty vibrant. So here I'm finally getting to what your question was.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah. I figured we can be circuitous with this since I'm a poet, I tend to digress. So you have to be patient.
You know, I used to teach on an adjunct basis, and my students told me that my digressions were the favorite part of the class.
Yeah, they often are the best part.
You know, and I thought, well, heck, I don't even have to plan for that. You know, I can do that on my own. I'm sorry. Back to what you were saying.
Yeah. So Well, here's what I have to say about contemporary poetry. For one, it's very diverse, which I'm not sure a lot of people realize. It's racially diverse. It's very diverse in terms of class. It's diverse in terms of cultural heritage. And it incorporates a lot of different influences from overseas, locally. It incorporates influences from different genres. I can't even tell you how many poems I read that are inspired by, you know, not by, you know, sort of Greek myth or by, you know, some painting from the Renaissance, but by a Lil Wayne song or inspired by a Johnny Cash song or, you know, I mean, it basically, you know, poetry has kept up with the times in terms of its subject matter. I mean, I read a great poem recently called Dear Ralph Lauren, you know.
Yeah.
And there was a great poem in The New Yorker by a young poet named Michael Robbins who's a polarizing figure in contemporary poetry, but I don't think he can deny that he's a great poet. And his first book's coming out from Penguin next year, but he had a poem in The New Yorker a couple years ago that was just called Alien versus Predator. And it was great. And it actually had nothing to do with the movie Alien versus Predator. But
you know, I was just about to say, I think I know what that's about.
Yeah, and it's not at all, and it's funny. It also has these other cultural references inside it. There's a reference to Camel cigarettes and the reggae star Buju Banton, and the New York Times is mentioned in the poem. So it's all over the place culturally, and I think there's a lot of that kind of experimentation. And I think if people heard these poems, they truly would not even maybe recognize them as poems because they're so far outside of what people, you know, I guess were taught in high school. So, and to kind of bring some of those things to people is really exciting to me because I think people would respond to this work if they were only exposed to it. And so that's really the heart of it, is that this stuff is good. It's relevant to your lives, and you'd like it if it was just if we just met you halfway, basically, in how it was presented to you. So that's really what we're trying to do. And there's also a lot of poets out there, I think, who are experimenting with how poetry is delivered. There's this great press from Seattle called Wave Books, and it's run by a group of sort of youngish poets, like 30s, 40s age poets, who are really, I think, trying to push how the audience engages with their work. And they had a tour of the U.S. a few years ago called the Poetry Bus Tour, where they loaded up a bunch of poets into a bus and just drove all over the country. And they basically said that they'd read anywhere, anytime. And so they did. They did all kinds of readings in non-traditional spaces, and kind of where anyone asked them to set up, they'd set up, no matter how challenging the space.
Mm.
And they generated a lot of buzz because of that, and they generated a big following from a lot of people who, again, wouldn't normally pick up their books. And two of them also, Joshua Beckman and Matthew Rohr, have done performances where they actually do a sort of a form of poetry improv on stage, where they'll write these poems that are, they'll say that the poem's going to be four lines or the poem's going to be seven lines. And one guy will start out with a line, and the next guy will have to do the line after that. And so they'll basically go back and forth writing the poem until they get to the line length. And they purposely sort of try to challenge each other in terms of making it as hard as possible for someone to write the next line and still have it make sense with what came before.
Oh, it's kind of like dueling banjos, but with words.
It is. And because, I mean, I don't think everyone could do this in the poetry world, but these guys are really good at it, and it's actually incredibly entertaining. And they even made a CD out of it, which is completely listenable. So stuff like that. I mean, I think there's a lot of experimentation out there. I also, in terms of collaboration, there's a lot of collaborations between poets and musicians. I think that's happening more now than ever. And I'll give you two quick examples.
Mm-hmm.
One is there's a poet named Mattia Harvey, who's a New York-based poet, who just basically did a collaboration with a quartet, and she wrote a libretto for a Philip Glass piece. And they recorded it, and it's been performed. And I think it was with his blessing, as I recall, but don't quote me on that. But the recording's out there, so it must have been to some degree to his blessing.
Right.
Another one is that we're actually trying to bring here to Miami is there's a guitarist from the Canadian indie rock band Broken Social Scene.
Oh, sure.
His name's Andrew Whiteman. And he actually started out, his first job was at Coach House Press in Canada, which is, you know, one of the great small presses for poetry in Canada, been around a long time. And so he's always been a poetry lover. And so he just is right now finishing up a collaboration with his wife, where they basically put an entire book of Alice Notley poems to music. And it's just I've heard three of them, and they're actually kind of incredibly well done. They just sound like these amazing, forward-thinking folk songs that feel thoroughly modern as well. Because I know that word folk sometimes feels antiquated, but they're incredible. We're bringing him to Old Miami to do a different project that's collaborative. He's actually going to be doing an extremely experimental live collaboration with DJ La Spam from the Spam All-Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And coincidentally enough, they went to college together at the University of Toronto, so they've known each other a long time. But so they're going to do some, I mean, I don't even know what they're doing. They don't even know what they're doing, I don't think. But it's going to involve Spam's collection of spoken word records, of which he apparently has a ton. I guess when he first started collecting in the 80s, he would buy anything that was just someone talking over the record. And he has an incredible amount of this stuff, and he's apparently going to be chopping it up and mixing it and doing stuff. And then somehow Andrew's going to be working himself into what Spam is doing. And so it's going to be totally out there and weird, but hopefully a lot of fun.
That is a completely different take on the mashup.
Yeah, a totally different take. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a live mashup of sorts. And it'll definitely be interesting, I promise you that.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the things that are going to be coming up with this festival that go against what people might think when they hear poetry festival.
Sure, sure. I mean, the most obvious one, the one that's been generating a lot of press for us, is that we're bringing James Franco, the actor James Franco, to read poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's just the novelty there is, I think people just aren't used to like having that kind of star power at a poetry festival. You know, name recognition usually isn't a strong suit of a poetry festival. What I'm hoping, though, basically, is that that's bringing attention to other aspects of the festival. I mean, I really want people to come and enjoy James reading his poetry, and also his mentor, Tony Hoagland, who's a great poet, reading his poetry. So I want people to come to that event and enjoy it, and I know they will. But I'm also hoping that those people will pay attention to some of the other stuff we're doing, and it'll shed some light on some other aspects of the festival. So I'd say that's the most obvious. The other ones that are coming up are we're doing an event with a woman named Cecilia Pavón, who's from Buenos Aires, Argentina, and she's much more well known in the artistic community. Her and her partner Fernando Laguna ran a cooperative sort of DIY art space in Buenos Aires called Belleza y Felicidad for over 10 years, and it was kind of the nexus of the avant-garde in Argentina for both poets and artists.
Mm.
And we're bringing her and her American translator, Stuart Krimko, to do a talk at MoCA on the 20th. And it's really going to be about in some ways I don't know what it's going to be about, which is the great part, but I know it's going to be coming out of her experience of being both an artist and a poet, working heavily in translation, working very much as a grassroots organizer in a city and organizing artistic activity across disciplines between different communities, which I think is really important for Miami's literary community going forward. I think if it's going to be successful here, there has to be two elements to the literary community here. One is that we have to be collaborating with the artists here, because there's just such an amazing, talented crop of young artists in this city.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us not to be interacting with them and working with them, we're basically wasting a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be learned in terms of process and those things from working with those people. I mean, if you look historically at poetry communities, they're almost always tied up with an artistic community, and there's that kind of exchange. So that's one aspect of it. The other is that I really think we have to be paying close attention to translation. You know, in a city like Miami that's so linguistically gifted and so diverse, for this not to be a hotbed for translation, I think is ridiculous.
Right.
So that's something I really think needs to be a feature going forward. And so that's why we're doing some events coming up that focus on translation. One is we're doing a reading at the New World Center on Miami Beach. That's a Cuban-American poet named Victor Rodriguez Nunez, who primarily writes in Spanish, but then does a lot of translation from Spanish into English with his partner, Kate Hadeen, who's also a poet. And they're coming down, and they're going to read with an American poet named Forrest Gander, who's one of the most preeminent Americans who translates work out of Spanish into English. He lived in Mexico for a long time, and he's done a lot of the most important translations of contemporary Spanish language poetry into English over the last 25 years. And so the two of them are going to do a joint reading that's going to be both in English and in Spanish, and is going to be a lot about sort of that existing within both languages and translating back and forth and kind of what that means within poetry. So.
That sounds really daunting, because there's so much nuance in poetry anyway, but then when you start mixing the two different languages, you know, does the point really get across?
I mean, I think what's great about it is, like, there really isn't a point to get across. I mean, I think the only thing we're trying to get across is how pleasurable it is to hear this work read. We actually did a translation event last night with some local translators. And, I mean, I know some Spanish enough to kind of get by in Miami, and I don't know a lick of Portuguese. And we heard poems in Portuguese and in Spanish last night, and they were just beautifully read. And I honestly, I didn't need to know what they were about. I mean, just hearing them was was an incredible experience. And we had them read in English. You know, we had the translation. But I to be honest with you, I didn't even need to hear the translations most of the time. I mean, I was really content with hearing the poems in their original languages. And I really think when you get a great reader, people will feel the same way. I mean, it's like listening to this strange music that you've never heard before. It's really beautiful.
It's just bound to happen then.
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
So
yeah.
What have the reactions to the event? We're about 2 weeks into this festival.
Mm-hmm.
What have the reactions of the crowds been up to this point? Talk a little bit about that.
From my perspective, the reactions have been great. We did an event at New World Symphony. We did a special edition of their Inside the Music series where, you know, it's usually five to six fellows pick a topic within classical music and then sort of do an informal talk slash performance based on that topic. So we did one in the main symphony hall with the conducting fellow Teddy Abrams, who designed the evening with us, and the topic was poetry. And so he presented along with some fellows and a guest soloist from Philadelphia named Anna Davison. We presented basically like 7 to 8 short pieces that incorporated poetry or were inspired by poetry, alongside the artist Michelle Okadona reading some of her favorite poems from the same era as when these pieces came out,
mm-hmm.
Sort of as companion readings. And we had over 500 people, and there was a standing ovation at the end, which, I mean, I honestly thought if we got like 50 people, it would be great.
Well, you must have been just blown away to have, you know, such a large turnout and then enthusiasm like that.
Yeah, it was insane. I mean, people were standing and clapping. You know, when the artist came off the stage, there was this sort of like throng of people that was mobbing them to talk to them. And I mean, it was amazing. It really was, and I did not expect it. You know, some of the other reactions we've gotten is that I keep meeting people who have heard about the festival through one way or another. People that I did not know and that I've never talked to about it, but know about it already. And, you know, based on our mission of, you know, sort of everyone encountering a poem, I mean, that's almost the best kind of reaction is that people already know about it before you can even pitch them on it.
I'll say, yeah.
Yeah. So that's been great to hear about that. And it's really just, I feel very grateful for all the people who have been excited about the festival who have then gone out and told other people or tweeted about it or sent out Facebook messages. So
now this festival though isn't just about readings and attending.
No,
not
at all.
You're getting involved in schools and you're doing
outreach
and things like this. Talk about the other components of this festival.
Yeah, I mean, one that we just did that I'm really excited about. And again, this was another result that I didn't expect or didn't even plan. But we sent a local poet named Casey Belcher into one of the women's prisons in Florida, and she did a workshop with some of the inmates. And we thought, you know, like we really wanted to reach the prison population. We're actually doing something else later on in the month. But it was important to us because, I mean, you know, these are people in Miami, right? If we're really serious about this mission, they count.
No.
And so she did this workshop with a group of women, and then all of a sudden she came to our office, you know, 2 days ago, and she dropped off a chapbook that the women had made together that had all the poems that they wrote in the workshop, and it had an introduction, and it had cover art, and it's printed out and stapled together, and, you know, there were like 80 copies of it. And so we've just been distributing this chapbook, and the women were really excited about just their work being distributed and getting out of, you know, out of their circle of you know, of where they exist and having people interact with it. And it's just like, I mean, I didn't plan for that. We didn't budget for that or anything. I mean, it was just something that happened, and
mm-hmm.
and it was just incredible. And those are the things that are just so rewarding. I mean, this, I don't know. I don't have enough superlatives to really discuss it.
When you were starting to put this together, did you have any idea that you would get this sort of a reaction?
Honestly, no, I really didn't. I mean, I thought people might be excited by the concept because it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I really didn't think people would get this engaged with it. I really wasn't banking on the level of enthusiasm because at the end of the day, like, I'm realistic about it. It's poetry.
Sure.
But I think what people are responding to is how concentrated we are on civic engagement and how much we've tried to get to really reach people.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're responding to, the fact that, again, getting back to how the festival is designed, where we really have cared about reaching specific audiences and reaching out to those people. And I think that people are reacting to, you know, to us basically extending that sort of metaphorical hand instead of just saying like, oh, hey, this is great, you should come to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
we've got approximately 2 weeks left in the festival as well.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us some high points?
Sure. Well, this weekend is Sweat Records' annual concert. I guess this is the second annual. It's called Sweat Stock.
Oh yeah, I know Lo. Yeah.
Yeah, you know Lo. Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah, she's one of the stalwarts of Miami life. You know, she's like one of those people I feel like we can't live without. You know, she just does so much for the music scene here. So Sweat Stock 2 is on Saturday, and so we've got a couple poets who are mixed into the lineup in various ways. And then we also have like this sort of big surprise that I'm not going to tell you what it is, but if you're at Sweatstock, I don't think there's any way you're going to miss it. But it'll be a different way for you to interact with poetry. It won't be a reading.
I was going to say, you're not going to have Iggy Pop there, are you? Because I've seen pictures.
So, oh,
I know,
man.
I know he's down here.
He might be there, but it won't be because of me.
Okay. All right, you're off the hook.
Okay, good. Good. So that's one. We're also we're gonna have some poetic surprises at the Borscht Film Festival on the 23rd, which is, you know, another night-funded grassroots cultural event. The organizers of which, you know, we're good friends with. We've been doing stuff with them for basically the last 3 or 4 years. So we're trying to get some poetry involved in that. And then really, I mean, I'd say the big highlight is that, you know, these last 4 days of April, we're really trying to finish strong with this. And we have events the 27th through the 30th at the New World Center. We have at least one event a day at the New World Center for all 4 days. All the events are really different. They're all, I think, really exciting in various ways. And then we have a couple of late night events at the Purdy Lounge on Thursday and Friday, the 28th and the 29th. And I think there's all those events are just going to be great, and I really hope that people get excited about them and come out to them. You know, because that's really where we are. You know, we kind of design the month as much as possible. We're trying to push out towards people, and then we hope that people will come to us for just a few days right at the end of the month.
Yeah. Well, Scott, we've covered a lot of ground here in a short span of time, and it certainly seems like. It doesn't seem like you have any problem filling your days here recently. So before I let you go and let you get back about your business, is there anything that we haven't covered that you think would be important for the listeners to know about?
You know, the one final thing I'll mention, which is going to be a highlight, which I'm not sure is something you can attend, but it could be something you could look out for, is... we have a guy named Dave Landsberger, who's a young poet who did his graduate work here in Miami and then moved back to Chicago. So he's not a local right now, but he's been a local. And we're bringing him back to Miami to do a project that's called the Poetry Ferrari. And basically, he started a Kickstarter page, which, if you don't know what Kickstarter is, it's basically a way to crowdsource the funding of an artistic project. And it just got funded. He just reached his goal, I think, like late last night or early this morning. So what he's going to do is he's going to rent a Ferrari Spider convertible,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to have a driver, and he's going to have a bullhorn, and he's going to be driving around Miami that last weekend of April reading Walt Whitman poems out of the Ferrari, and then periodically he's going to park it somewhere and do a reading, basically standing up on the seat. And he's as much a performer as he is a poet, and anyone who happens to catch that, I think, is like, there's no way you're going to have a bad day after catching this. So I hope people look around for it.
If he'll be in a Ferrari, shouldn't he be reading Ferlinghetti?
He should. I'm going to suggest that.
Yeah,
because I know he's going to be reading different things. So
Yeah,
I see
Walt Whitman more out of like, I don't know, maybe an old MG that doesn't quite get along. You know, it's got a tricky clutch, but you know, you love it anyway, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that could be a whole reading series if we match the poet to the vehicle.
Maybe next year.
Yeah, that's an idea. I might steal that from you.
Do it. We'll get some Americans in there in the Ford, and it'll be great.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Scott, I've had a great time talking with you, and I just wish you continued success here with the rest of the festival. And it looks like this is something we'll probably be hearing from you next year too, won't we?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, definitely.
Now let's talk about how people can find out more information. Let's give a website here where they can go and find out like a schedule and things that are going on with your festival.
Absolutely. It's pretty simple. It's just www.omiami.org, and that's omiami, all one word, no punctuation or underscores or anything. So, and it's all on there. And when you click on, when you go to it, you'll see a big omiami logo, and then it'll give you the exact time and date. And when you click on the time and the date, it'll take you to whatever the next event is. So, but you can also scroll through and see past events and future events and all that stuff.